The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small cap on this VE Day special show. So welcome, Paul.
Yes, thanks, Paul, and hello, everyone. And obviously, you know, great respect for all the veterans and the fact that we live in freedom. It's amazing, isn't it?
No, you're right. I mean, it's obviously a really important day, and you know, with the celebrations and stuff like that. So, really important for everybody. Okay, good. Well, it's been another being terrifically busy last 7 days on the markets. And so maybe we can start there, Paul. Have you got any quick investor thoughts on the sort of the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England? They made the bank made their interest rate decisions. We've also had got a potential UK-US trade deal in the offering, which may be out this afternoon. And we've had a surge this week in M&A. But putting all that together, any quick thoughts, what it means for investors?
Well, I think that sums it up very well, Paul. I mean, I think the main thing with interest rate changes is if they're unexpected, isn't it? And the US holding and the UK cutting shortly a moment ago were widely expected. So I don't think that's a... Now, the interesting thing on the possible trade deal, again, we've got to wait until Trump speaks, which I think is not that... It's not long from when it's due, isn't it? I think it's 10 a.m. Eastern US time, so fairly imminent. We have seen some stocks this morning, I think, responding to that. I mentioned pre 8 a.m. Oh, actually, Aston Martin shares could go up today, and they have done 5 or 6%, because they export a lot of high value items to. Also, I think we looked at, was it Renishaw? One company today went up.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later on.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, it's definitely all traders are anticipating the companies that will benefit from them. And, you know, fingers crossed, let's hope they make a bob or two.
Yeah. What was also quite interesting, apparently, I just saw a headline in the commentary for Andrew Bailey, the head of the Bank of England, and he was questioned by a journalist after his cut of 0.25%, which was well expected and well flagged. But what he did say was that if there is a trade deal, then that will reduce the level of uncertainty, which means then he may be able to take the reins off faster than expected on the interest rate cuts. Now, that hasn't actually fed through yet, but you could see that come through tomorrow if we do get a reasonable trade deal.
That's interesting. I saw that the latest, I think, the Citi forecasts are for something like 4 rate cuts this year, which, I mean, is going to just turbocharge things, I think. So I'm actually pretty positive about the macro. The UK doesn't actually export many physical goods to America anyway. Yeah. I think people are the press and the usual gloom and doom merchants are really missing an opportunity here. I mean, it feels in the last 3-4 weeks as if we're in a bull market for small caps. I don't know about you, but my portfolio is drifting up every day. You know, if I unfortunately tick a watch, which I shouldn't do, but it always used to start off just start drift during the day. It's now drifting up almost every day. Could be a flash in the pan, but to me, this feels like the start of a bull market.
Yeah, I mean, certainly small caps will respond favourably if we have to see interest rates. And it'll also get Chancellor Rachel Reeves out of a hole as well, because I think they, yes. I think the government basically pays about just over £100 billion each year in interest, which is the second biggest department behind the NHS in expenditures, much more bigger than, I think, education and defence together. So if that reduces by a whole percentage, then you just lopped off over £25 billion a year. I mean, just think about that as a saving each, you know, for the government. So
yeah, there's a certain amount of it's index linked, so changes quickly, doesn't it? But in terms of new issuance, a lot of it rolls over, and of course they're still running substantial deficits each year. So yeah, it could be. Although of course a modern monetary theorist would come back and you say, but it's not really debt; it's yellow dollars. That's what they say. Well, because the government issues its own currency.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so there are different ways of looking at it. I'm not at all convinced by MMT, but it's an interesting theory. But of course, the forex and the bond markets would blow it out the window if any government decided to just start printing money, wouldn't it? I mean, look at what's happening in Turkey and all these other countries. So yeah, interesting.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay, let's move to some stocks. We've got some big movers actually today. Let's start with one where you own and I own, Big Technologies, which is basically the electronic tagging expert for prisoners and the custodial services. It's got a big contracts in Australasia, in New Zealand and Australia, and around the world. And it won recently one out in Northern Ireland as well. But the big news was that actually a bit of a rock star CEO has just been appointed. Ian Johnson, who's got a fantastic track record at NIOCS and working for the Harwood staff. And the shares actually are up 21% today on the back of it. It was an inline trading update. What are your thoughts anyway?
Oh, I'm an absolute numpty. I've been selling.
Have you?
Yeah, just because I needed the cash for other things and it wasn't going anywhere. I have made a profit on them, but you know, so I'm a total numpty, proven yet again, I'm afraid. Yeah, I missed that big I bought near the low and made money. So yeah, I screwed up. I sold them too early.
Well, I think what's important is that effectively quality companies attract quality managers. And what happened here is you got an artificial sell-off down here on obviously what happened with the founder, Sarah Murray. And that has attracted interest from Harwood, and they appointed Ian Johnson, this really good, you know, CEO with a with a big track record in regulated industries, mainly healthcare and life sciences. He was put in to be the non-exec on the board. Harwood haven't actually got a disclosable position, but because of their sort of like, you know, cute, you know, their reputation, they can still.
Sure on that? I thought they did have I think they did pop up recently.
Oh, maybe they do. I haven't seen it. Maybe I've missed it. But anyway, and so consequently, they've decided to put him in, you know, as the CEO. He's a non-exec, I think, non-exec chairman of NIOCS. So, I think the key is that. If you look at his track record, he did a turnaround of Sicastia, which is NIOCS now. Took it from 25p to effectively he got out a tender offer, took it to about 80p because they've already paid out sort of like 15, 16p in special dividends and tender offers and stuff. So, you know, as long as you're prepared to wait, then he could be putting his Johnson magic on this one.
I thought you were going to say something else then. But yes, all I would say on this is that it's great that we got the investment thesis on this right, where we said that, look, the thing is cashed up to the eyeballs, over 100 million net cash. Obviously, I fluffed the trade, as it turns out, but, you know, it happens. So I feel a bit of an idiot for selling a day or two before this. The only thing I would say about its... Big Technologies, it put a trading update this morning. Q1 trading update. Nothing special in that. They did claim 11% Q1 increased sales, but they adjusted out the contract that they've lost. They took it out of the prior year comparative. So I thought that was a bit cheeky, but I think at least it does show that, you know, the ongoing business doesn't seem to be affected by the shenanigans with the former CEO and the founder. And I think they had at least one nice big contract win fairly recently.
Yeah, that was the Northern Ireland one.
Northern Ireland, yeah. So that, again, confirms that business doesn't seem to be, it's very high margin, doesn't seem to be affected. Although I would say that the legal costs will be probably very substantial and probably go on for quite a length of time. Yeah. So that's the caveat. But it's lovely to see an investment idea play out as we hoped. I take it you're still holding yours. You haven't.
I'm always a long-term investor until the thesis breaks. So wait and see. You're a tough man to please. You are, Paul. You're my old schoolmaster. There, you sort of like whenever you try and sort of please them, you get battered.
Well, we like to consider bull and bear, don't we? And I mean, my main trouble is I'm useless at actually managing the portfolio. I like doing the research, but I always fluff the trades up. Oh, it's so frustrating.
No, you're too modest there. Okay, let's move to another one. We've got another high quality. This is the special instrumentations business. Renishaw put out a trading update this morning, which was bang in line. So you wouldn't have thought there'd be much reaction. But actually, the shares are up 16%. Any sort of interpretation, any thoughts on this one, Paul?
Yeah, my colleague Dave wrote a section on this morning. And when I was reviewing it, I thought, you know, this company looks great. Mm. It's a really high quality business, isn't it? High operating margin. Seems to design and manufacture a wide range of specialist products. Still own and managed, which is unusual. Lovely balance sheet. We like it a lot, but we were wondering if this rather exaggerated bounce today could well have been a tariff trade deal type thing. Yeah. Because I think it sends 20% of its products are manufactured outside the US and exported into the US market. So, yeah, I think you've got a bit of a trade bounce on this for tariffs as well. So what do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on. I read the announcement just after 7 and thought, crikey, this is a really high quality instrumentation business, and it's aiming to increase its EBIT margins from about, I think it's about 16% currently to 20%, and grow the top line at sort of high single digits through the cycle. So it's clearly it's struggled over the last 12 months. Because it was in line, I think people went into it thinking that maybe there was a potential profit warning coming given the tariffs. Now, when they said at the towards the end that actually they are going to be impacted by tariffs and they're not sure whether it's going to, they've got the definitely direct and then maybe some indirect. I was hoping the shares might go down on the back of it. Got that one wrong, because I would have actually bought some at the bell, and then I just saw it soar. I thought, okay, well, everybody else is doing the same thing, because the worry of the impact of the trade deal, as you rightly point out, if we can get a trade deal this afternoon, that's it. And it just is a matter of being patient. That should sort itself out. So yeah, no, I mean, I was looking at the numbers, and assuming that it's the same, then, I mean, it's not cheap. It's on a 20 times period. Yeah. It's got cash on the balance sheet, 12 times EBITDA. But I remember, I'm pretty sure there was strong signals in the market about a year ago when the founder died that Siemens was going to put a number on these at about sort of 30, 40 quid. So, you know, it's a really good business, no doubt about it.
It is. It's lovely. I mean, they on the tariffs thing as well, it was good that they were so open about it, but they didn't mention how adding a surcharge, I think, or the import tariffs themselves are paid by the customer, aren't they? They didn't mention how they would expect that to affect demand. Now, the fact, you know, it might have a knock-on effect, and if there are US competitors making these sorts of products internally within the US. So I don't know on that. That's a question rather than a comment. But the very high operating profit margin says to me this company's got pricing power. So it must have products that, you know, have competitive advantages. So no, we think it's very good. But again, we missed the 16% price rise. So it's fully valued now.
So, well, you might find that if you go 20% operating margins, then it'll move into its valuation quite quickly. But anyway, it's definitely, if it comes down, or you know, has a you might find some of the extra sales it just made in the last quarter could have been done for the ramp into the ahead of the tariffs into the States, you know.
Yeah, I mean, profit was only flat though. It was a 9-month update, so you know they'd not blown any numbers out of the water. It's looking almost ex growth, but I think Dave picked up on a point. Apparently, they've got some important new product ranges are going to be launched fairly soon. I don't know what those are, but this meets all my criteria to go on my buy the dips list. You know, yeah. I keep a list of high quality businesses that are a bit too pricey for me right now. But if there's an unusual spike down in the market generally, which actually we saw with this share, it came from a very, very high valuation down to just kind of touched reasonable and then shot back up again. So yeah. I think I've maybe missed the trade on this one, but lovely business, Renishaw. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's make a hat trick of quality companies that should be on people's stock watch list for buy on the dip. Let's go to Filtronic. Came out with a trading update earlier this week, and said that it was increasing estimates for this year and for next year, largely on the back of sales of their communication sort of antennae and stuff for low Earth orbit products into SpaceX. Shares again have done very well. Is this one a run the winners? Keep it going.
Tricky, this one. I mean, we love Filtronic. It's performing so well, and it was one of my top 20 picks for this year, actually. Share ideas. When was the last update? 6th of May. Yeah, that was yesterday, the day before, wasn't it? Rose 8% to £1.03. May 25 at year end, I think, or is it half year? No, year end trading update, exceed market expectations again. You know, you can't argue with it. It's doing brilliantly. The only thing is, for our purposes, we dropped it from green to amber green purely because we don't speculate on what the future holds on my Substack. All we do is review the position as of now. And the broker forecasts are saying, you know, a lot of the programs, like with SpaceX and with the European space people, are front loaded. So the forecasts are still very cautious or negative for the next financial year. So without knowing for sure, now obviously the bulls are saying it's going to smash the forecast, and they could well be right. But because I don't know, I can't give a view on that. So I've eased it down from very positive to moderately positive. But you know, it's great, isn't it? It's great. Get net cash on the balance sheet as well. The contract flows have been fantastic on Filtronic, so it feels like it's one to hold, doesn't it? But I don't know. How do you are you in this one, Paul?
No, I'm not. I wish I was, but it would have been an absolute winner, wouldn't it? No, I mean, I think you're perhaps being a bit too harsh on the on not knowing what goes forward, because I think they've done, I'm just guessing here, 7, 8, maybe even 9 profit upgrades over the past 18 months.
Yeah, I agree.
And not one profit warning, which says to me that they beat that, they put the bar low and beat. Yes. They underpromise and overdeliver.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. I'm not being harsh on it at all, because I'm just not making a judgment on it. Do you see what I mean? For the purposes of my Substack, we don't get into trying to work out what will happen in future. We just say, as of today, these are the facts and figures. Then we leave it to the readers to do the clever bit that you've just talked about. But I agree with you, actually. I think that you're right.
With that, okay, good. If anybody wants to ask Paul any questions, please put them into the chat bot and I'll read them out. We've got one from Luke. He's asking about XP Factory. He says it's remarkably strong, great cash flows, good product. Is the market overlooking it? Basically, Experiential Level owns Experiential Leisure owns Boom Battle Bars and Escape Hunt, I think it is. That's Escape it. Room. Escape Room. Yeah.
Okay, good. I think it's Escape Hunt. Yeah. Escape Hunt. Well, I originally really liked this one when it morphed into its current format. But the shares have done really, really badly, and it has missed forecasts. But I'm actually turning positive on this one again, XP Factory, because, and I should disclose, I actually bought some yesterday and today. Full disclosure. The results, I think, was it a trading update or results? The cash flow prior to expansion CapEx is actually pretty good. There's no denying that. The balance sheet is a bit weak. I would prefer a stronger balance sheet, but it's not dangerously weak. The like-for-likes were not great in March. I think they said that, which is odd, because other pub operators have said March was good because the weather was sunny. So I'm not quite sure about that. But I think it's a very interesting rollout, very, very cheap, 20 million, 23 million market cap. And they've built, I think the guy running it, Richard Harpham, I mean, he's a lovely guy, but you try not to assess the shares based on the fact that you get on well with the management, you know, but you have to separate that. But I think what he's achieved there is really impressive, you know, in severely bad macro over the last two or three years, he's built a substantial business. It's heading for, was it 80 million revenues for next year or something? A chain of, what, I can't remember how many, but it must be 50-odd sites, maybe more. Prime locations, a lot of them. And experiential leisure is great because it's higher margin, because a lot of the revenues are gaming revenues, which are 100% gross margin. There are competitors, though. So there are other companies who've latched onto this as well. But I think they really, it's concept proven now. A lot of people were worried they'd have to do equity fundraisers. I think that worry has receded almost completely, actually. So I think 50 to 100% upside from XP Factory in a bull market. And we don't really know yet if we're in a bull market, do we? So we've maybe got to be a bit careful. It is high risk because of the weak balance sheet, but I like it. Yeah, I'm talking my own book. I have.
I think you're right. If you get a cyclical up, you know, we get interest rates coming down and a cyclical swing in the markets. And I think the bit of background with March sales being slightly soft was simply because, you know, as you said, the sun came out, and because people want to be in the beer garden or in the veranda rather than actually in an escape room, you know, or down playing, you know, I don't know, throwing axe or axe throwing, you know, in underneath, you know, in the basement or something. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I mystery shopped the London Oxford Street branch again only about a week or 10 days ago on a nice sunny Sunday afternoon. So I thought, oh, nobody's going to be in there. So I was cycling around London, went to Portobello Market, went past Boom Battle Bar. Oh, I'll pop in, it'll be empty. It was rammed, absolutely rammed. And it's like walking into a disco where people are playing games. It's really, really loud. Great atmosphere, nice engaging staff. I would say to people, just go and visit one. And I think you'll be surprised. The format works.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. Okay, we've got a question from Rising Bull 1985. He's asking about Vitrex, which came out with a...
We talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yeah, basically they do this peak polymer, and they came out with an announcement that they just signed a really quite a very important commercial deal with one of the big oil field services companies to supply peak into their pipe work, which then goes into offshore platforms such that it's flexible, it's lightweight, and it can float and stuff. And this is one of their five big mega products and stuff. I don't know whether you've got any quick thoughts on this. The shares obviously responded well yesterday.
No, I didn't cover that one. I've looked at, last time I covered it was on 7th of February. And the thing I particularly like about Vitrex, it's got an amazingly strong balance sheet. So it's got scope to do acquisitions and buybacks. So 6% yield. So yeah, I'm positive on it. I think it's good. You like it too, don't you, Paul?
Yeah, I own it. I've owned it for well over a year. I mean, it's been, I owned it, unfortunately, when it was about up here, I think, around about sort of 14 quid. So I'm underwater, but it just shows you, you just got to be, for these kind of, if you have a thesis, it won't play out necessarily over 6 months, 12 months, 1 year, 5 years. You know, these things take a long time. And you've just got to, as long as you've got a sound balance sheet, which is your sort of like, you know, where you're excellent, one of the many expertise areas, it's got a sound balance sheet, you can go through ups and downs. And as soon as the thesis works, then longer term, you'll do fine. So,
I love it. I love these overly strong balance sheets, stuffed full of surplus assets, because it means you can ride out any downturn. You don't have to worry about dilution. They can, they often attract bidders who want the, you know, who can use some of the company's own assets to finance it. There's lots, and the market underprices strong balance sheets, so I think it tips everything in your favor, a nice balance sheet. That's why I like it so much. But thumbs up from me for Victrex as well. I think it's
good. We've got a question from Stefan asking about One Spatial, the DO Spatial data expert. It's a big position big exposure in the UK and expanding out into the States. It's seen, unfortunately, a bit of sort of like deferred customer decision making because of the uncertainty. And so consequently, I think it's taken down some of its numbers. It's got about two-thirds of its revenues now recurring. The shares have come down quite a lot now. What's your sort of the latest on this one?
Yeah, we had a look at One Spatial yesterday in yesterday's report. My colleague Dave covered this one. We were a bit disappointed with this. I think the problem is One Spatial went out to the investor shows and have generally been quite promotional about the product and software, which does sound great. I mean, I think it's one of the, but they were telling this very bullish story about it. But in the last 6 months, I'm afraid they haven't delivered on the, you know, the results were pretty poor. This was for January 2025. Profit before tax almost disappeared, only 0.2 million. You can't rely on EBITDA with One Spatial because it capitalizes anything that moves onto the balance sheet as intangible assets. And the cash flow is poor as a result of that. So the numbers as things stand now are actually quite soft. And that's why I think the share price dropped to 45p and it was about 70 or 80p last autumn. I have to say, and I know this will upset people who hold the stock, but I think the fall in price is justified by a failure to deliver on the pipeline. So they need to really get their act together. That said, if you like the software and you like the potential, and as you quite rightly said, annual recurring revenues were up 14% to 20 million. So is it one of those things that's doing the SaaS transition?
Yeah, it is. I don't know where it's going to hit out at with the SaaS, but if the industry is anything to go by, 75, 80% is usually a norm because 20%, 25% usually be implementations and training and stuff like that, unless you have a total out of the box type of product that doesn't need it, is so intuitive that you don't need any sort of like, you know, training. But I think what these guys do is they aggregate data over huge sort of like, you know, different data sources from different systems. They put that into a huge data lake and then can cut and paste it however the client wants to see it, to get, you know, information and stuff. But I think it's got a really strong niche in this, though, in terms of, you know, basically assets under the ground and where they are. And so it's got a big ROI for clients, particularly this One StreetWorks product. But I would say, I'd be tilted along the lines of this is a fallen angel and it's worth sort of like looking strongly at this one, because it just feels as though it is on the cusp of doing something well and it's just gone through a bit of a temporary slow patch.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's what is it, about 50 million market cap, I think.
50 million market cap. You're right. 50
million, which is not a king's ransom, really, for something that could, you know, if it works, you could see this 100 million plus, couldn't you? But I think we're just in that uncertain period where it's not entirely clear if it's an also ran, because there are quite a few other geospatial software companies, but they do tend to attract. There was one that attracted a very high premium bid, wasn't there, not that long ago?
IQ Geo.
That was it, yeah. So the takeout bids for them are often way above what value GARP investors like me would consider reasonable. So it could, I'm not against it. That's all I would say. I'm just uncertain at this stage, but I do like some aspects of One Spatial, so we'll keep a close eye on it.
Yeah, just IQ Geo was taken out. I think it was about 8x sales, and One Spatial was about 1.4 sales. So just to let you know, that's a strategic value. Okay, we've got Peter Oakcroft and Paul the Parrot both asking about Ampario, basically the product maker for animal care and animal manufacture. They bought a BioVet about last year, I think, and they came out with some positive trading update just recently. The shares have responded pretty well, actually. The latest on this one at all, Paul?
I've not seen anything since the 7th of April.
I don't think there has been.
No, that they announced a buyback then, because they've got a good, Ampario has a good cash pile. It's got surplus cash then. Our view on the 7th of April was that it's looking cheap again. So it must have done a big plunge. I don't know if you've got, I'm just on a different window. So yeah, I think that must have been round about near that spike when we reported on it. I see it's recovered nicely. So that's good, isn't it? We like the business. We always bellyache about the management rewards, which I think are excessive, but we probably won't get into that can of worms again.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay, good. Let's move to another question. We've got Tom Hildrick. He's asking about Windar Photonics, which basically does this LiDAR technology that goes on top of wind turbines to help the efficiency of improve the efficiency by 1 or 2%, which over the life of a wind farm makes huge amounts of extra generates huge amounts of free power for the business and stuff. The difficulty with the shares have dropped off, but they're up 12% today.
Are they?
Well, as we say, Tom reckons that they're up 12%. Don't have any thoughts on this one. Obviously, Trump has nailed and really hit wind farms, and they just had that big cancellation in the North Sea as well. That huge wind farm, which was going to be done by one of the big Scandinavians. So I think there's a headwind for wind farms, but the shares are up 12%. Any views?
Yeah, I'd totally forgotten about this, actually. I did look at it after, I think, one of your fund manager interviews. It was flagged. And I thought, I did a 1 or 2 hour desktop review of it. And I thought, this actually looks quite interesting. Here we are. We covered it on the 24th of March on a trading update and an order delayed. Yeah, that must be the thing you're on about. It did a fundraise in December 24, so I think it's cashed up. Ah, it's coming back to me. This is the one where they're going to actually hire it out on a SaaS basis. Not SaaS, but you know what I mean. Rental basis, aren't they? To accelerate the orders, which did worry me a bit that it might need more capital to do that. But basically, we think it looks really interesting, potentially interesting. So we're amber green, which is moderately positive. Yeah, it sounds like you like it as well, Paul.
Yeah, I do. I think this is say the whole industry though is going to have to change its sort of economics because to make it work, you need guaranteed electricity prices to be paid over the life of the actual offshore wind. But all I would say is that regardless of the long-term picture, short-term, that says to me, look at that. I mean, it's gone from 40p to 52. I know it's illiquid, but that says to me somebody's either buying a lot or there's a bid coming out on it. You know, I mean, that looks...
You just don't know with these microcaps, do you? It could be. I mean, was there any RNS in the last few days?
No, there hasn't been. No. Oh,
that's strange. Well, the first thing I would do on that then is look at the actual individual trades and see. I mean, the trouble is the big trades are printed with a delay, aren't they? So you may not be seeing the full picture. So, but if you see lots of small trades, then you know it's retail buying, which can mean it's somebody who's just ramping it somewhere on a bulletin board or whatever. Then if you look at the end of the day, after the market shut, sometimes some big trades appeared. So that would be my first portal call, really, to Google, get AI to have a quick look at it and look at the individual trades. Yeah.
Good point. Okay, let's move sectors. Let's go to the movies. We like those. So we got Facilities of ADF came out with a it was results, was it earlier on? But it coincided the night before you had President Trump deciding he was going to... Tariff movies, foreign movies going into the world's biggest cinema market, which is the States and stuff. The shares sold off alongside Zoo Digital. But let's stick to Facilities of Aid. They basically rent out trucks and trailers to the stars and to makeup artists and stuff. And also I've got a auto track business that you basically rent these ground out to live events, to concerts and stuff. Shares are unbelievably cheap at the moment. What's your view?
Well, I think there are all these headwinds, aren't there? And this was quite a cynical float, arguably, when the US streaming companies were throwing big money at productions in the UK. And this thing, I think, was flying. I'm pretty cynical about it now, having seen how it's panned out, and particularly the insider selling just before. Within a placing and then a profit warning a couple of months later. It's pretty shocking, really, how this has panned out. So I'm wondering if it's now loss-making. So, a calendar 2024 results, loss before tax of 2.8 million. Always blames the Hollywood strikes and the aftermath of it and everything. I'm wondering if this is the new normal, and particularly now with all this business of Trump threatening 100% tariffs on foreign-made films as well. I personally wouldn't touch it. But on the bull side, it is now trading at par with net tangible asset value. Mm. And you don't have to worry about debt, because the debt is actually finance leases on the equipment, which, of course, don't have covenants, as far as I'm aware. But I don't believe a word they say in the Outlook comments. And I don't believe the forecasts either, because they've consistently proven to be way too optimistic. So, yeah, I couldn't get above amber on this. And that's purely because it looks so cheap. But I think it probably should be cheap. But the AutoTrack acquisition looked lovely. That was a cracking little business.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I would say one of the biggest shareholders is Harwood. And if you just look at what they've just done with big technologies, do not be surprised if they inject another superstar CEO into this business to turn it around. Now, the only issue is that I'm sure they've already thought about it and are already got things in progress. I mean, that's total speculation from me. But looking at what they've done in the past, they don't like having big loss-making positions where it needs a turnaround. So they'll be doing this. What that says to me with that delay, because we're looking at, they put the profit warning out in November, 6 months now. What that says to me is you haven't got a list as long as your arm of rock star CEOs wanting to take this up. So,
Harwood, Harwood are up to 16% now, aren't they? Now, he sounded thoroughly cheesed off in one of your interviews.
Yeah, he did. He was.
He was, you know, in his charming, sort of rather posh, polite way.
He'd been sold the pub.
Yeah, he more or less said that, he felt he'd been stitched up there. So, they're averaging down, aren't they? I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, I wouldn't be averse to having a dabble on this. I think it maybe has got down to the level where risk-reward, who knows, might be kind of even or even slanting a bit in our favour.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think it's one for the brave, but the upside is significant on it. Don't know that about it. If they get that, if they do get that turnaround, improve the utilization of it, then it could do well.
Yeah, but you see, the trouble is, this reminds me of do you remember a stock called Snoozebox, which on a much smaller scale fitted out articulated lorries as temporary accommodation? They look great. They got great daily utilizations and they made profit for about 1 year, I think. Yeah. Now, the issue they had, it eventually folded and delisted and was a total wipeout. What the problem was, utilization. And it costs a lot to move these things from one site to another. Yes. And that was where I think ADF has exactly the same fundamental problem with its business model. Mm. It needs to get in big, you know, extended contracts to make money. And if it's doing small bitty things with gaps in between and downtime, it can't make any money. So I'm not that bullish about this at all.
Yeah, well, on the sort of like the glasses half full side, I was going to say it looks a bit like Avesco. Remember that company that
it was
basically used to rent out essentially concert equipment, and then was trading at what, £2, and you tipped it to me, and I've doubled my money, and then it was bought out from £2 at about £8 or something, and you made out like a bandit.
Yeah, I remember I was lying in bed when that happened and my broker rang me up and said, Paul, you've just made squillion. Well, no.
You did. You did really well. Fabulous. You did well for me, mate. Thanks very much.
Yeah. No, that's right. Well, yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, the thing is with ADF, I suppose, is that I'm pretty sure it's the UK market leader. You might have a situation where, but it all depends if the UK film and TV industry gets clobbered, doesn't it?
Remember, it's what's that saying? It's always darkest before the dawn. Okay, let's move to another stock that that has been a bit clobbered, even though it came out with a good trading update. It's Card Factory.
I love this one.
It basically is the UK's number one in selling sort of birthday celebrations and cards. It also has got built a business out in the States and is now moving a bit into online as well, competing a bit against Moonpig. But the shares sold off on a strong performance. What's your view?
Absolutely perplexed. I couldn't believe it. I read myself and my team, the four of us do, you know, that really intense hour between 7 and 8. And we have a chat room saying who's doing what. And I said, it's going to be a good day today, because both me and John own Card Factory personally. I was kicking myself as I top sliced about 20% a few days earlier because it's had that nice bounce. But anyway, the results I thought were really, you know, considering the valuation, the results were in line. The outlook statement was in line. they're doing everything right. The balance sheet now is fixed. Basically, it's sorted. You get a nice dividend yield. It's got scope to pay much more in divvies. I think the management are very good. I like everything about it. I said to John, this is going to be up at least 10% today. And then it opened and dropped 12%. Have you got any inkling why?
No, I mean, it doesn't compete against the Chinese guys, does it? And if it ever makes a success of its online, you know, it'll start competing against the likes of Moonpig. So how it can be on sort of less than 6.5 times PE and pay 5% dividend yields is beyond me.
It's me too. I think it's just the wrong price. I did my sums on this, and I think it's worth a minimum of £1.50, the way I would value it, which is it's just the wrong price. I think everything else is background noise. So don't understand it.
Yeah. Okay, let's move to another consumer stock. We've got Trainline. Came out with, was it results or a train? Oh, but not. It was results or a trading update. I'm not exactly sure. But they basically took down their forecasts for ticket sales across the UK and Europe from previous high single-digit guidance, largely because two things. One, it had been impacted by Transport for London increasing its zone of sort of like, you know, tap and go. And also, I think the commission it is allowed to make on ticket sales is also going to decrease and stuff. But the share sold off quite hard, actually. Any views? Trading at round about, I think it was about 13.5 times PE for what's classed as really as a sort of a category killer in all things train ticketing.
Yeah, that's right. It dropped about 10%, or 8 or 9% as soon as the results came out. But it recovered quite a lot of it, I think. I did take a few yesterday, 7th of May it was. Yeah, that's yesterday, wasn't it? Only a tiny trading position to hold for a few months and see what happens. The results were, I thought, good. This was February 2025 year-end results, and it trumpeted a record operating performance. But as you quite rightly say, the outlook was good as well. It said cautious, but expecting February 2026 EBITDA to be at the top end of expectations. So all quite positive, but you quite rightly flagged the company also did mention some headwinds. I think it also mentioned a Google algorithm that was changing against them. And listening to them...
Just on that Google algorithm, I don't think it's the algorithm. This is a broader point. I'll tell you what I think I'm pretty damn sure of what it is that effectively Google, the search has basically put in Gemini as that sort of like, you know, at the top of those 10 blue links it normally used to do. And so what it means is that it makes it less easy for things like Trainline to get to get effectively coverage. I think that's what it didn't change in the algorithm. It's actually changing the order from having effectively AI at the top rather than having the search links.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, it amounts to almost the same thing, doesn't it, really? The other thing one of the readers came up with, which I was grateful for in the reader comments on my Substack, was that they said they noticed in London mainline stations, it's wall-to-wall Uber adverts. Yeah. And apparently Uber have some competitive, trying to compete in this ticketing space. Yeah. Do you know anything on that, Paul?
No, I don't know. I have heard they're trying to get into it because it makes total sense, because probably get into a taxi and then, want to get a train and stuff like that. To be perfectly honest, my view is they're seeing an impact from TfL increasing the region where they have tap and go, okay? Now, we both know and own Traxys, or you own them through your ISIS, okay? Now they've won that huge tap and go contract for all regional cities, which is being rolled out over 3 or 4 years. You can guarantee that if they're going to get impacted by TfL tap and go, and Traxys makes the success of their tap and go, which I'm pretty damn sure they'll be able to do, then that's going to impact their tickets. The offsetting is that Trainline's growth is in Europe and doing more longer trips across effectively operating companies and countries, and that's where their sort of like their USP is.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Now, just a couple of final points on Trainline. the balance sheet is negative 208 million, which is not good. But I did dig into that, and basically it's fine because it's capital light with no fixed assets or inventories. So it does the balance sheet isn't a problem, even though it's negative. 83 million net debt. It's so cash generative at the moment. And it's the first time Trainline shares have actually looked reasonable value. But as you say, that could be because the business model's coming under pressure now. So we'll have to wait and see. But I've just taken a tiny, teeny position. Yeah. Just for fun, really. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, good. Okay, let's move to let's go oil and gas. Obviously, the oil price has been taking a bit of a hit because OPEC has decided to increase production, and also uncertainty has meant, you know, demand, etc., maybe slightly weaker and stuff, which would be good for inflation. But anyways, we go to oil field services company Gulf Marine Services. Came out, was it a Q1 trading update? I think they increased certainly held expectations. What's your sort of view on this one?
Well, it's a core holding of mine. I mean, as you say, sentiment is very much against Gulf Marine Services because of the oil price, but it keeps churning out fantastic figures. So it reported yesterday. It was a bit confusing because it was labelled, I think, Q1 results. And I thought, that's strange. Why is a 200 million market cap UK company reporting quarterly? Is it listed in America? But it was more of a trading update. I got the impression they're doing well and they wanted to tell everyone. So the adjusted EBITDA, which is the figure they quote, was up 21% in Q1 this year. And the guidance was unchanged. They said demand is strong. The order book is now $570 million. But they've got basically a two-year window now. They're really rapidly deleveraging. They've got a two-year window until a load of new ships hit the market from competitors. So I think that is another thing people are worried about. But they are saying they think that'll be offset by retirement of aged fleets. They said basically providing there isn't a recession and demand for oil plummets, then they think they'll be fine. But, you know, this has gone from really financially distressed to actually quite safe now. I mean, the leverage is I don't think I've ever seen such a rapid deleveraging that springs to mind anyway. And the leverage now is down to 1.79 times EBITDA, which for an asset-backed business is nothing really, is it?
No. I think one thing on the, just to play devil's advocate, is it is a lag. Oil field services is a lagging indicator on the oil price because you can't switch on and off, you know, basically big projects and exploration and production and this sort of stuff. But what does happen sort of 9 months, 12 months down the patch as oil prices go down is that the marginal sort of like production, you know, the higher value production, particularly subs, you know, offshore decreases, and then it really does hit the rates first of all, rather than the utilization.
Yeah, fair points. I mean, I'm not an expert at all on resources, but my view on it is I just think we've got this two-year window where basically it will have pretty much cleared all its debt completely. So I think it'll be, providing management don't do anything daft, and I don't think they will because it's fairly new management who've proven they've turned this thing around. What you don't want is them buying loads of new ships just as the daily rates are about to take a nosedive. But they've also got the kicker on this one is that these ships can be quickly and relatively cheaply converted to servicing offshore wind farms. They got one out of their fleet already doing that in Europe. So there is now more optionality in terms of alternative use, which I think is another string to its bow. I'd like to see some divvies. I think it needs to start. And they are, you know, they're kind of talking about divvies, but we haven't had any yet.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's switch sector. We've got James Cropper. It basically does sort of specialist packaging, paper and recyclables and stuff like this. Large family-owned business. Used to be a bit of a darling. Shares have come off quite a bit. But it does seem now have bounced and gone back up on the back of improved sort of outlook or less worse outlook. In fact, I think one of its competitors, Mondi, this morning came out with a trading update saying it started to see its own packaging and paper business starting to see firmer pricing and higher volumes as well. Interesting time for this business. Don't know if you've ever had a look at this one at all. We never talk about it before.
Yeah, we looked at it yesterday, actually. This is financially distressed, James Cropper is. It really got itself into an absolute muddle. Something to do with speciality products relating to hydrogen or something, which seems to have gone bad. Yeah, that seems to have gone badly wrong. And the legacy business doesn't look very interesting at all. Anyway, it said adjusted EBITDA in line. This is for a trading update for March 25 yesterday. Shore Capital said that the dividend's going to be cut for the current year. Marginally profitable. You're only looking at, you know, just above break even, really. But the market cap, when we looked at it, was only 13 million. So, you know, it's tiny. No overall picture, really, in the outlook statement, just snippets, which we don't like. And the debt we think is too high, 13.5 million for a company that's only making 1 million PBT, too high. So I still so I declined to give a view on this because I think it's still quite high risk, but could be one of those nice explosive turnarounds if they succeed in turning it around. Any view from you, Paul?
Well, there is consolidation in the industry, admittedly, for the bigger guys, because International Paper bought DS Smith, didn't it, not long ago? I think it was completed at the start of the year. And If one of the biggest players, Mondi, is saying actually it's now starting to see improvement in pricing and in volumes, because they're basically what they said was that it was the bottom of the cycle was at Q1 and now it's starting to see an uptick on it. Well, this, you know, if those green shoots can continue, then you'll find better trading will work through a bit, like, you know, Gulf Marine Services in 2 or 3 years' time. I mean, this is 12 quid stock. This was, you know, we're talking 90, that's, you know, this was only what, 4 years ago. So, you know, it's now £1.65.
I don't know how comparable it is, though, with Mondi. I mean, they're so different in scale and operations. I mean, as an aside, we quite like Mondi. I had a quick look at that this morning. Q1 trading update was in line, strong order book. But it did mention potential macro impact on orders and didn't give any guidance. Nice, strong balance sheet at Mondi as well. So, yeah, that's worth people having a look at. And a 5% yield. So that would be your safer option, I think, in paper and packaging. Cropper looks a bit of a special situation, I'd say.
OK, right. Well, let's go to another sector. Let's go to automotive parts and stuff. And we'll have the cheapest stock on the market segment.
We've got
CT Automotive. Came out with a trading update. They basically do interiors for cars all around the world. Got a facility out in the States, in Mexico. We're actually seeing increasing volumes there as OEMs in the US decide to put to effectively onshore or reshore some of their parts and stuff. The gross margins increased by 6% to about 28%, and they currently trade at around about, I've got, even after the bounce, 4.2 times PE. So what's your view on this one?
I think it's fab. I mean, people are going to think we've set this up to ramp my stocks, but I haven't even looked at the agenda. I have no idea what Paul's going to ask about, because I bought some of these yesterday.
Oh, really?
You can't, you can hardly get
Well done.
Well, I had to pay 4% over the offer price to get a tiny scrap. So it's totally illiquid, just for fun. I mean, no, I looked at the numbers, published a note on it at about quarter of an hour before the market opened, saying, I just don't understand why this thing is so cheap. The figures were great. For the I think it was calendar 24 results that were out yesterday. Really good. It seems to be a sort of front end for it's based in Portsmouth, as far as I can remember.
Yes, that's right.
And it makes car parts for, as you say, automotive sector, generally quite small, you know, interior fitments and quite those little bits of plastic on the dashboard and stuff like that. But it has them made in low cost production centers. So I know for sure it's in Mexico quite heavily, and China, and I think possibly Turkey. But the margins were surprisingly good. And on the tariffs, they said there's opportunities as well as threats. And apparently they were saying they were getting more orders for their Mexico factory because US automotive manufacturers want to nearshore. So it sounds like they're betting that some sort of deal will be done with Mexico, which I think is highly likely. I mean, don't you, Paul?
Yeah, I think they'll be fine in that. The one area that I would say, you had Dowlais, which is with the old GKN business, came out the trading update this morning, and they had actually taken down their industry figures of production for normal light vehicles across the world because of the uncertainty. And there's nudged it down. Okay. So yeah. I think it all comes down to is that can these guys win more market share and increase that, continue to increase that growth margin? But the automotive sector is definitely a tough space to be at the moment.
Oh, definitely. But yeah, definitely.
But it's reflected in the price.
Absolutely. I mean, CT Automotive is valued at absolute buttons. And as you say, even after this big rise, it's on a PE of about 4. And it's got a good balance sheet. The balance sheet's fine. They did run into problem during the pandemic, though, and had to do basically an emergency fundraise of equity to stay afloat. But that, I think, is now in the rear view mirror. I think the balance sheet's about $25 million US dollars net tangible asset value, which looks fine. Debt is quite modest relative to profitability. Now, Dowlais, I didn't get around to looking at that today because that was an inline Q1 update because it's in takeover talks. That was the reason
we didn't
look at it. Is that still live, the takeover?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the merger with American Axle.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And I think CT Automotive is owner-managed as well.
Yes, it is. That's right. Yeah.
I think it looks a little hidden gem, but it's so illiquid. You know, it's a waste of time trying to buy in any sort of size.
Yeah. Okay, good. We got Daniel. He's asking about Plarium Imaging, which they came out with a trading update today or something.
Yeah, I haven't looked at that yet.
Yeah, they basically do xenon gas into MRI scanners, and they're trying to retrofit. Got FDA approval. The shares have been absolutely, they got tanked, didn't they?
Oh, terrible. Yeah, I did pick up some of these a little while ago at about 1.5p, but I threw in the towel a few days ago, actually, and just took a 30 or 40% loss on it. The reason being is that I don't mind things with speculative upside if they've got kind of 2 years plus cash in the bank. Yeah. But Plarium is a heavy cash burner. We had results out this morning for calendar 2024, $8.5 million loss before tax. You know, it's talking the thing up, but it's only got $12.5 million cash left, which takes it through to Q2 in 2026, which means the begging bowl is almost certainly going to be out again later this year because they're not going to run it to the wire, are they? So I think anything that needs a cash call, you know, in the next 6 months, realistically, for me, that's a no-no. So I've ditched those and just taken the hit.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think on the bull side, he's got great niche technology that strategically needs to sit inside one of the big MRI scanners, big scanning business, whether that's sort of like a Siemens or a GE or the old Toshiba, I think it is. I can't remember who owns those guys. But all those, the big scanner businesses is the one who should be owning this, in my view.
You're right. It's too small to be listed. And I think, you know, you do have delisting risk, given that the market cap's only 12 million and it's rapidly running out of cash. Will there be an appetite to refinance it again? I don't know. It does have some credible major shareholders, though, doesn't it? I think from memory, there's some in a large Italian group that. So the technology looks credible, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's move to another software company that did a little placing this morning. We've got Pulsar Group, which I think is formerly Access Intelligence. It does sort of like software for marketing. Quite a competitive space, this one.
What's the ticker, Paul?
It's PULS is the ticker. It's the old Access Intelligence business.
Yeah, do you want to keep talking? You keep talking, Paul, while I look it up, because I can't remember anything about this one.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it does software and services for help corporates improve the ROI on its marketing and promotional advertising spend. Got some pretty good contracts. It trades at around about, less than 1x sales. Admittedly, the margin, they're running 7% EBIT margins, which it should be able to lift in the fullness of time. I guess these things is just you need to be scalable, and also ROI advertising and promotion is a tough area to be, one, because it's competitive, and two, if there's uncertainty, that's the first thing which gets cut in budgets. But they did a little placing anyway. The shares have really been hammered.
Was it discounted, the placing, then? I'm assuming.
Well, it was actually at 38p, but you can see how, yes, it has been discounted. I mean, look at the share price. It was.
God, I know. I'm looking at it now. Yeah. It's come down quite a lot. It is. I notice it's forecast to be profitable, though. It's got a forecast PE of 16 times. I haven't got anything current on this. I think it would, it disappointed with an announcement on 24th of January, didn't it? Mm. I'll take it. Yeah, mild profit warning I've got in my notes. I haven't looked at it since, Paul, so I'm a little bit out of date on Pulsar. Do you think it's worth us taking a fresh look at it?
Yeah, I would do. I mean, I think that the key question is, can it grow in a competitive market? Has it what's its USPs, etc.? And, you know, has it effectively got the ingredients to increase, you know, to get a better, higher rating? And is it largely just because effectively nobody really looks at it? Because, I mean, the market cap is only 52 million quid.
Yeah, that does look potentially interesting, although it's made losses, continuous losses, for about the last 8 years, and it's only just moved into kind of break even. So it sounds like one of those things where you're making a leap of faith about the forecast. Yeah. Actually, talking of which, I can't remember if we mentioned it last week, there's another small software company doing products for the marketing world called Ingenta. And that looks stunningly cheap, ING. I don't know if it's too illiquid for you, but I thought that looked very interesting. I just seeing if I could pick your brains on that one. You're a walking encyclopedia, aren't you? So
it's definitely small. It's got a good software. I think part of it, which has been really doing the growth, is this royalty management. So it allows corporates who have need to collect or pay royalties. It also does the management on that one as well. Mm. So it's a tough anything in marketing and in advertising and also in royalty management at the moment is classed as sort of like discretionary spend, and people are migrating to the best, but it does look very, very cheap, I would say.
You're getting a 7.5% yield on Ingenta. Mm. It's got a cashed up balance sheet. About half the market cap is net cash. I just looked at the numbers and I thought, this can't be right. But I went through the accounts and it does appear to be. I suppose the risk with Ingenta might be it delisting. There's somebody called Martin Rose who's got 28%. Oh, that's the chairman. And Kestrel have got 21%. Now, they are quite interesting. They find these obscure recurring revenue businesses and build big positions. So that might be one to have a look at.
Yeah. Okay, another one on that same vein. We've got Skillcast, we never look at. It basically does, I think it's regulated sort of software for the financial and services for the financial for financial people. So it helps people train how to, basically make sure that they perform, you know, learn all the ins and outs of financial form member rightly. The shares have actually got.
What's the ticker, Paul?
SKL.
I put in SKIL, that's why. Yeah, if you can tell me the ticker when you say the company name, then I can look it up. And that way I sound clever.
You're always sounding clever, Paul.
Well, I don't know about that. 30th of April, we've got results. Calendar 2024 results. Yeah. It rose 8% on results day. Has that rise stuck? Do you know? Have you got the
data? Yeah, it's gone up another 4% today. Yeah, it's 48p now.
Yeah, we didn't give this one a colour. A nice return to profit, my colleague David Tev says. Good annual recurring revenues. Outlook trading in line. Oh, 9.1 million net cash. That's about 20-25% of the market cap.
Yeah.
Although software companies usually get paid up front, so there's probably a offsetting deferred income creditor. But yeah, we think this a very quick overview looks quite interesting. Skillcast. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks trading just over 2x sales. So if you can keep the top line going, it seems to be growing. The top line average is about 14-15%. So
Did you say it's something to do with regulatory compliance or training or something like that, isn't it?
I think it's in financial sectors, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I think this is coming back to me now. I think this is owner-managed as well. Mm. Quite interesting, that one, but I don't have a in-depth knowledge on it. I haven't really got in-depth knowledge on any of these. These are just quick overviews, you know, that's what I do.
Yeah, okay, good. Let's go to, we've got one which came out, quite a big company, Redcentric. Basically, they do managed IT services in the UK and also data centres. Good margins on this one, a bit of debt, trading at sort of like mid-single digits. How do you see this one? It's trading at, well, I suppose it's about 16 times, but only about, it's about six times EBITDA.
Yeah, again, my colleague Dave looked at this yesterday. I wasn't madly keen on it because we kind of confer, you know, when we read the announcements. I was sort of amber, and it looks all right. But Dave coaxed me up to amber green. He thinks it's quite good. What's interesting about, you're right, we don't like the balance sheet. It's got a bit too much debt, but it's only 1.1 times EBITDA, so that's probably all right. Limited outlook comments. And it said broadly in line, trading update, so that's slightly below, isn't it, really? New CEO came in, and it's done a big reorganization. I think it's IT managed services, isn't it, and data
yes,
centers.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Quite a broad range of products, sticky clients. And it did have bid interest from Italy last year. I don't know. Can you remember what happened with that, why the bid fell through?
No, I can't. No, no.
No, I can't. But anyway, Dave thought it was quite interesting. So we're moderately positive on Redcentric. Have you? Oh, the Harwood boys are in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I would say on six times EBITDA, given most of the capital has already been spent with the data centers,
yeah, that's true.
Then actually it's in a pretty good place. And it all comes down to whether you can win more business to just put into the hopper, increase, you know, and basically a lot of it just drops straight down to the bottom line. It looks a good place.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. We think, is there not a risk though that Amazon just hoovers up everybody's data requirements with its cloud services, or is this something different? I don't really know.
Yeah, well, it's a great question. A lot of Amazon and Microsoft Azure, etc., and obviously Google as well. What they've done is they've become so big, and people have given them all their data. Okay, everything's moved to the cloud.
Yeah,
they've been unknown to a lot of people. They've been increasing their pricing significantly, and so they are not the low cost option by a long way. Okay,
oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so if you want to basically use them, you're paying quite a lot for their services. Plus, there are certain things that a lot of corporates don't want to put into the cloud, you know, just for security. Let's be clear about it. The MOD won't be putting his data into, or the police force into the cloud. Or
somebody will leave it on a bus, won't they?
Yeah.
So they don't need to be hacked.
Yeah. So this is why you need sort of like other alternatives, which are a bit more economic and, you know, they can do well. But the big danger that you get from Amazon and Microsoft and Google is that they can then overlay all the AI stuff really fast because they've upgraded they've got all those NVIDIA chips into their data center. So if you're looking for that really high performance, then you've probably got nowhere to go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering generally as a business risk for any sort of data services driven business is the fact that these monopolistic web services groups could just suddenly turn around and just break all these businesses' business models, couldn't it? We're doubling up, tripling our prices and there's nothing you can do about it. How many companies would that? So it's nice to hear that there is there are smaller competitors still in the market to avoid it all being taken over. Yeah,
and it also happened. They had that IT upgrade problem with CrowdStrike because the cybersecurity software guys in the States. They did their upgrade, but unfortunately, it went through Microsoft Azure and knocked everybody's data out, and they took everybody down. So.
Things are so fragile, aren't they? I mean, I'm really worried about these supply chains. Co-op and Marks and Spencer's have really been severely hacked. There was one press article saying M&S, it was going to take months for them to repair their supply chain.
Yeah.
I mean, this is scary stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. Okay, good. Let's move to B2B brand business. We've got franchise brands. They own the old filter business, which is basically recycling cooking oil from fish and chippies and from burger joints. Big, they got a place in the UK and in the US. These are all franchise things. And then it also has a sort of a Pyrek, I think, which does basically flexible hoses that go into sort of industrial applications to remove things like drainage problems. And also it's a bit cyclical. So the reactive stuff, I think, is doing well where people need immediate response.
Yes.
That's recurring. But it's the cyclical part of their business which is struggling. These businesses typically go for about 12 times EBITDA, and it's trading at just less than 9 times. So don't know any thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I know the people who set this up, so I always feel guilty when I pour cold water on it, really. But we weren't madly impressed by the Q1 update yesterday at the AGM. It contained phrases like controlling the controllables, which, you know, is basically telling you that that demand is an issue. Somewhat cautious, we thought they sounded in the outlook statement. It's an okay business. The idea is they acquire, as you say, franchise businesses and then put them on a sort of central management and control system. And I've used Chips Away as well. That's very good. They're a franchise business for small stone chips on your car who come out to you. Also, there's an oven cleaning business, which I mystery shopped.
Yes, that's right.
So they've got a nice little mixture of things. But they said, I think they were struggling to, or finding it difficult to sell new franchises. And that obviously is one of the main profit drivers there. The main issue, though, is the balance sheet. I think they've overgeared it. Net tangible asset values and 77 million negative. The debt is coming down, but it's still too high, which means it can't really pay decent divvies. It can't really do any more significant acquisitions without having to repair its balance sheet with an equity raise. So from my point of view, I wish them well, and I'm sure they'll do well, but it doesn't particularly appeal to me. So I'm just neutral on this one, Amber.
Yeah. Well, I think the sum of the parts definitely show this significant upside, but you're right. It comes down to, if it starts seeing top line growth, then that will come through on the valuation. But
didn't they buy Dynarod as well? I think they might.
No, I don't think it's Dynarod. They do have some types of those businesses, but not Dynarod, really. I don't think so.
Okay, fair enough. No, I mean, it's got potential. We'll see how things develop. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Very final question. Rissoff is asking about Character Group. Does it have any competitive advice? Is this the greeting wrapping paper?
Character. No, it's toys.
Toys. Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. This one warned on profit, I think, didn't it? Brokers. This was 11th of April, so not recent. It was withdraws market guidance due to tariffs because 20% of its sales are into the US, but it said it was still profitable for August 25. This is the one where the FD owns about 20% of the company. I don't know where he got his money from, but I'm not casting aspersions before I get sued. But it said basically US tariffs have considerably obscured its ability to forecast, which is straightforward, isn't it? It's got plenty of cash, lovely, strong balance sheet at Character Group, quite lumpy track record. I think it does things like, you know, it gets a distribution.
Does it do Scalectrics? Does it do Scalectrics?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. It's got. I think Scalectrics is Hornby, but I'm not sure. Okay. Yeah. But rock solid balance sheet of Character Group, so I wouldn't be panicking on that one. But we don't really know how it's going to perform. So an amber from me. But I mean, looking at the chart, it's a nice cheap value share. You might have to put up with a year of maybe small losses while they digest tariffs.
Yeah.
But for people with a longer term perspective, I think character groups worth having a look at. Do you know it, Paul? It sounds like
not at all. I mean, I would say if it doesn't own a big sort of like toy brand, the answer to the question about whether it has competitive advantage, it's really a distributor of toys.
And, yes, good point. I think you're right.
I would say, it's a tough area that. I mean, it's dead cheap, though. Sort of 8-9 times PE with cash on the balance sheet. You're right. Who would buy it? Who would want to buy it, though? I don't know.
I don't know.
The finance director.
Yeah, maybe he'll take it private. I don't know.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks everyone for your questions. Thanks again, Paul. And hopefully, in about a couple of hours, we might get news from the White House that we do have a US trade deal, which would really put us sort of like a rocket, hopefully, underneath the small cap sector. But
let's hope so. Fingers crossed. So, God, that hour has just flown by, hasn't it?
I know. Anyway. Same time, same place, same channel next week, Thursday at 2 p.m. So thanks again, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.